and then the funding of it. That's it, as fast as I could.
Thank you. I don't know if you have questions.
If I could, just one comment on your City of Portland issues list. You list resolve issues in the West Interchange and sustainable practices and habitat protection. And so we talked about this before, but the Parks Bureau, and I know Audubon and a few other groups, are interested in continuing to discuss the interchange on the west side for pedestrian and cyclists.
Yes.
And with respect to its impact on whatever habitat and other and the land beneath it, it appears from the work you've presented to be the best solution to the interchange. But we look forward to working with you to assess the impact of that design on the natural area below.
Yes, we're working very closely with the Bureau of Environmental Services, Parks and Recreation, Water Bureau, and the Development Services, to as well as our partners, project partners, ODOT, and the county, for example, Metro, TriMet. This area needs a lot of attention. Just to expand a little bit, it must provide access to land use, existing land uses, the cemetery, the parks. Up north here, maybe I can use the, well, it's not on, but in the up north you have access to boat community, missing the name, McAdam Bay, I'm sorry, McAdam Bay Club, as well as commercial uses up to Taylor's Ferry, as well as provide access for bicyclists and pedestrians. You can see, for example, that there's a spiral to bring the bicyclists down from the bridge to the trail. It's quite a bit of a high differential there, which calls for a large platform. You know, you can only go down 4 or 5% to meet ADA. So that creates a large footprint. That's in floodplain, as habitat-sensitive area. And the Parks Bureau has ambition for this area is to be a passive park, basically for habitat restoration. Up north, and just north of the houseboat areas, you have Stevens Creek, which is a project, an area in Willamette Moorage Park that has received attention, has been, wrap it up? Okay, and so there's a lot of issues there, and we just need to work with the different bureaus and the different agencies to see if we can shrink that.
I don't think we've found the best thinking on the west side landing.
So we look forward to working with you on that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions from council? Mauricio, you've done a fantastic job, and I appreciate the enthusiasm and expertise. John, you as well. Thank you, Sue. Commissioner, would you like to say a few words? Welcome to the City Council. You only have to give your...
This is your first official testimony?
No, I'm teasing. Sorry.
You only have to give your first and last name, and you can talk for as long as you want.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Cafori. I'm Multnomah County Commissioner from District 1, which is the district that includes all of our lovely bridges on the river. And I have with me today Ian Cannon. He is our bridge manager. On behalf of Multnomah County, I would like to thank Mayor Adams for serving on the Policy Advisory Group and for his strong support, both public and private, of the Selwood Bridge project. We would also like to thank Sue Keel, Mauricio Leclerc, and the rest of the Transportation Bureau staff who partnered with us throughout this LPA process. We have a lot of work ahead of us, but the adoption of the LPA will allow us to enter the next phase of the project timeline. I was particularly impressed with the amount of public involvement during this discussion. We had literally thousands of people testifying, writing letters, phone calls, marching in the street. As you know, we closed the Selwood Bridge for one morning and had an amazing march across the bridge with parents, dogs, kids. It was quite a sight. Funding for this important project is at the top of the county's priority list, and we are committed to working with you, the city, our regional partners, the state, and the federal government to get this bridge built. And I think sometimes it gets lost in the process as we're discussing all the alignments and all these interesting details, but that this really is a serious need. We're not just building this because we would like to have more jobs or because we think a new bridge would be really pretty, but because of the safety requirements and the really necessary connections that this bridge provides for the community and for our neighboring regions. So I appreciate your continued support, and Ian and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for the commissioner or Ian?
I have a comment unrelated to this, if I could, since time is not of the essence.
Well, we're just not going to allow that.
I want to thank Deborah for something else as well, which is she has is co-convening with me the task force is looking at Section 8 success rate, looking to find ways of removing barriers to people that have a Section 8 voucher and are trying to access the private rental market. And on a personal note, it's just a pleasure to have her as our housing counterpart at the county. You know, she just brings so much to this job, and I want to thank you for, you know, the relationship that we're building. And I also, just since you were here earlier for another debate, I just want to acknowledge that the person who originally had the idea for restructure about 15 years ago was another Kafouri, mm-hmm. who now serves on the Housing Authority of Portland board. So she's in a position to give us both some hell about housing issues, and that's your mom. So anyway, I just want to acknowledge her role, because she really was the first person who got it, and in turn, all these years later, we're now being faithful to that vision. So
I'm happy to hear that you've learned, as I have early on, to take her advice when she gives it.
as have I. Yes, the mayor is looking nervously at me.
Yes. Oh, because, look at the time.
Because
we're at time.
He assumes that a county official is here, that I might degenerate into some diatribe about, you know, urban renewal areas, and that just exposes his lack of understanding of our history.
He doesn't know.
Oh, that's good.
That Deborah and I served together in the legislature, and she was such an effective member. I and the other members of the Democratic Caucus elected her as our caucus leader, which meant she would have been the speaker had she stayed in the legislature, but chose to have children and raise a family instead, much to the detriment of the state. So much so do I respect Deborah that I fear that had she been the one that came to council a week ago yesterday arguing against our $15 million funding mechanism, I would have made the motion to remove it from the package. So fortunately, Ted hadn't figured that out. Yet, but you may hear about this and use you as the secret weapon to.
Well, our chair is at the Metro Council today, which is they are debating and voting on this same measure. But I volunteered to come today here and you can go to that one.
Yeah. So it's really great to have you at the county.
Courageous County Commissioner.
And thank you. Don't mistake her current demeanor with as tough as she can be when she. She went up against the toughest people in the legislature when the Republicans dominated and articulately fought for the principles that she now works on daily at the county. It was really a pleasure to serve with her, and I'm excited
and only,
to have you at the county.
Only one time did I have to be taken outside in the hallway and lectured by Commissioner Leonard on my tact.
Which she said.
Only once?
Yeah, only once.
Which she said, oh, my God, you're telling me how to behave. I should listen.
I have a standing meeting and later in the day, Monday through Friday for those, but we'll talk.
Any other discussion from council? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Aren't you relieved, Mayor Adams?
I am very relieved. Please, quickly, while we're ahead, get out of the room.
And we grew up, see, the thing is, we grew up in the same neighborhood without knowing it. She went to Irvington,
oh, really?
I went to Irvington, so
okay.
We share a lot of those.
Has anyone else signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Anyone in the room that wishes to testify that is not signed up? All right, Carla, could you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Well, on a project as complicated and long-term as this, this is quite an achievement that nobody came to testify. And actually, that shows how well done the process has been, and that apparently, and I haven't had many emails about this either, so or phone calls. So good job to all concerned. Thank you for your good work. And it's an example of how the city and the county and Metro and others can work together, and that we need to continue to work together to find the funding for this, that it's a priority. My son worked at Oaks Park, and we live in Southwest Portland. So for a whole summer while he was flipping burgers, I was worried every single day knowing that he was going across the Selwood Bridge. And that's not it's not acceptable. So I'm very happy that we have the project plan, and I will help to try to get the funding. Aye.
Fish?
Mauricio, it's already been stated, but you really do superb presentations on lots of tough issues, so really appreciate it. And you've done, the last one I remember was Milwaukee Light Rail, and now this, and appreciate the way you take a lot of complicated things and reduce it to something that even this council can understand. So thank you for your good work. Sue, as always, thank you. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard?
This is a very important project, and obviously a lot of thought and care has gone into the planning, so I really appreciate the work of everybody. Aye.
Adams.
Thanks again. Look forward to finding the funding for the local match and to help with securing state and federal funding as well. Aye. Item is approved. That brings us to a holdover from yesterday. I refer to as Auditor Blackmer's item. I forgot the number. What's the number?
90.
Could you please read the title for item 290?
Accept transition report, key challenges for a new city council by the Audit Services Division.
Auditor Blackmer.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, Drummond Khan is not here today. I was going to introduce him. He's actually going back to Salem, in Salem, and then Ken Gavette, who worked on this report, is in Hawaii. So I have other places I'd rather be as well.
Let's not start that discussion.
Right.
That won't end.
Let me talk a little bit about the source of this report. We started realizing that we would have a new mayor and two new, relatively new council members, and a lot of things had changed, but there were a lot of things that were kind of ongoing issues that we thought would be worthwhile to put together into a report and convey to you. And especially, this is over and above even the economic situation that we're now facing. There are some pervasive issues within that are challenging Portland, I think, and they have for a number of years, and they will for many more years to come. And so we wanted to put something together to help you all focus on what these key issues are that need attention, and it's going to take a long kind of horizon to do that. And just in quick overview, the eight issues are preserving our valuable infrastructure, focusing on results-oriented management, assisting the homeless and improving housing affordability, improving services to Portland's outer east side residents, working with regional partners to preserve and enhance services, deliver efficient, effective internal services, meeting the challenges of demographic, economic, and social change, and then resolving recent audit recommendations. So I'm going to go through these briefly and cover what's in our report. And our report is on the website. And our report is also based on previous audit reports that we've issued. And we refer to those at the end of this report. So folks can actually go back and see the origins of some of our conclusions here. And I'm going to go off the page a little bit. That's unusual. Usually I stay on the facts and the conclusions of our audits, but given where I am in the city and the time I have left, I thought I would talk a little bit off the page, so I'll note when it's not an audit and when it's my opinions. Let me start in terms of our valuable infrastructure. You had a great briefing at your budget work session on our assets, which total over $22.4 billion. That is a wealth of inheritance from previous city councils and from the taxpayers that invested in our community and all that we have. And it's really critical for us to always keep our eye on that. So we did a number of audits in the past where we looked at the large bureaus, parks, water, transportation, pointed out the need for better planning and for their operations and maintenance costs when they acquire new assets. Our audits at parks and transportation show a real and continuing concern, and I raised it regarding parks, that the facility condition index, which we had been pushing for a number of years, was conducted for 2 years and then dropped again. Transportation had been tracking its the condition of the streets for over 16 years. It's moving to a new methodology, new software, and we understand the interruption, but again, it's a critical concern. It's been 2 years without that measure. It has actually been a valuable element for transportation to talk about needs to the public and be able to articulate it, which is one of the reasons why we think it's important to track the condition and the cost to bring these assets up to good operating condition. But again, it really is a concern in terms of deterioration of assets over time, and especially in these times when we have limitations in our budget, it's easy to defer maintenance to maintain operations. And I recognize that that can be something that you do cut back on, but if you've been cutting back on it for years, that roof that has a small leak at the beginning of the fiscal year can ultimately turn into major damage to a structure by the end of the year. Whereas if you've kept things in better shape, when the tight times come, it's easier for you to defer maintenance.
Well, I was heartened by the sentence that talks about the need for more funding.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really well-placed sentence.
Exactly. Well, and from the standpoint of the fact that when transportation asked us to come in and assess their paving operations, and it was intentional because they saw that they had a paving backlog and they wanted to see how they, any way that they could tune up their operations to get the most value for the, you know, the dollars that went into paving. So they knew they had a problem. They were able then to talk to council about all the recommendations they'd implemented and that ultimately that wouldn't be enough to close that gap either. The next area we focused on was results-oriented management. This is an area where, and I'm going to get off the page a little bit, we had recommended managing for results. We'd worked with the Office of Management and Finance on that project. But I've come to the conclusion that this is something that's almost systemic in this form of government. And it's not entirely bad, but ultimately it's something that I think you need to consider as you serve your role as a commissioner or mayor. And let me talk about, I think the commission form of government, I look at it on three levels. One is accountability to the public. The second is its ability to set policy and direction and be forward-looking. And it's initiative to address the future. And the third one is management of resources, getting the best value for the public from those dollars. And I would say that, you know, frankly, I support the commission form of government. This is something that, you know, I've worked around it. I've seen its strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, I recognize the voters like it. But ultimately, I think it's because of the accountability mechanism. And I think when you look around, you see that initiative and that forward-looking play out in the city that we have here. And I think those are two important things that you don't necessarily get in a strong mayor form of government or in a city manager form of government. However, the one area where I think it's weak is on the management side. And what I would say is that Portland is well run, but I don't know that this form of government is ever going to get us to world-class management excellence. And frankly, it's because we have citizen managers. That what I saw with managing for results was that we had employees and bureau directors who understood what we were trying to do and were willing to go that way, but ultimately we couldn't get the council committed to the structure that's required for them to be a part of it, to do the planning, to commit to following through on that planning and how the budgeting is done, to follow through on that budgeting to get the most value, to take the information at the end of the year on what was done or not done and use that to tune up what you do in the next year. There's a certain amount of flexibility that I think city council wants that's not allowed in a structure like that.
So do you have an example of a good run city that you compare our form to that we can look to? And
I think Charlotte, North Carolina is a good example. They use they use a different methodology, the balanced scorecard, but there are, and I would say the best in the world right now is what's happening in England. They are assessing cities on their governance. They're actually issuing.
Matt Davis jumped out of his chair back behind you there.
Well, they're assessing governments. They're sending out peer teams from one government to another to look at things like initiative, to look at, you know, how their financial condition, their SEA, and what they're actually doing now. They've bought.
Is that all cities in England?
They know the worst managed and the best managed cities in England. And they do it.
Is that done? I mean, is that coincidental that all the cities do it? Is there some form of government that requires?
Well, it's one of the nice things about a federal government is they can impose it on local governments. And they actually criticize the city councils on their ability to work together, their ability to kind of reach.
But so, obviously that's not possible for the United States. So, but you would say Charlotte, North Carolina, if some of us were interested in following up.
That sure.
Would
be the model. And I could get you more on, okay. on a
I'd
list
be
like that.
In that.
So to me, you know, again, it's something that it's council's decision. You know, you have your priorities, and obviously, you know, fitting within a structure where your budget decisions are determined. I mean, what I saw and what I heard in these recent budget sessions were you were making policy decisions within the budget process instead of, you know, it should have been budget decisions made in the policy process.
Mm-hmm. But I think that, you heard that exact issue articulated as a concern in the police budget.
Well, right, and other places as well, that there were...
That we didn't want the budget to drive the policy, that we wanted the policy to be set and the budget to follow that. That was exactly what Commissioner Fish articulated in the police budget.
Well, when your budget is 6 months out of the year, it's kind of hard to do your work and not be in the middle of a budget process.
Understood.
Is one of the other challenges.
So how do you fix that?
Well, that's where you really start conscientiously saying, okay, what are the things that we really think we can do to make government more efficient? And then, you know, work those into the budget process. But, you know, what we saw with managing for results was it was being subsumed by the budget process, that it was a part of it rather than managing for results. If you think about it, it's planning, budgeting, managing, and reporting. Budgeting is part of a bigger thing. And it was hard to build something bigger than the budget because it's such a consuming thing for this government.
Can I just ask one question about Charlotte?
Sure.
Because I stumbled on their website not long ago and thought they had a much better website than we have, among other things. But is there something about their form of government which you think leads to the improvements that their particular form of government, because they have a somewhat unusual form too?
Well, as I recall, they do have like a city manager there. And I think that's one of the ways that this can get driven is a city manager commits, but then you lose the city manager and it goes away.
A long-time mayor.
Yeah, but I...
A long-time mayor.
Well, and that is another advantage.
20 years or something.
Be there in 20 years.
You get to a point...
We'll all be there in 20 years. Huh?
You get to a point where you do see that we've done as much as we can in this way of doing things. Let's ramp it up. And that's kind of where I see Portland, that management is pretty good, but the next step is really requiring a serious, large commitment of this council. So the challenges remain there, and ultimately it's something that it's going to be a multi-year commitment, and I think, you know, the trade-offs may be that you can't be spontaneous in your budget decision-making. It needs to be more of...
He looked at you when he
said... I caught that.
He was looking directly at you and held his gaze.
All right. I'm returning
Thank
to the...
Thank you, Auditor Blackmer, for delivering that audit result here today.
I'm returning to the audit report. assisting the homeless and improving housing affordability is going to be a bigger and bigger problem. I remember about 15 years ago, a friend of a relative called me from Chicago wondering if there were any jobs in housing affordability in Portland. And I kind of said, well, no, you can buy a house for like $15,000 and in, you know, pretty good neighborhoods, and seemed like an odd thing to have someone working on that. And obviously, we've really hit a huge impact in terms of housing affordability in Portland, and it's just going to get worse. I think we are leaders in the country in that, but again, the problem is going to keep, you know, going farther than we can in terms of what we can solve every year. So it's just one of those that I think you're going to be struggling with as time goes on.
You know, the only silver lining, Gary, and it's an irony, is that it may be the best time to be a first-time homeowner in Portland, because you don't have to sell your home to buy a home. The market's soft. It's a buyer's market. There are federal tax credits. We have city programs and other things. So, you know, younger people who are pre-qualified, this may be as good a time as there's going to be in a generation to be a first-time homeowner.
That's very true. And any ways the city can help would be, you know, worthwhile in the long run for the community, because obviously homeowners have a stronger commitment to their neighborhoods and to their neighbors, and that can build, you know, stronger communities. The east side is another problem, and it's actually a consequence of some of the affordable housing or the low-interest loans, the subprime that's happened. It's created the housing bubble, which has brought a lot of rental properties up for sale, which has pushed a lot of low-income people out to more affordable areas of Portland and to the surrounding suburbs. We saw that getting worse, and we actually started reporting on that. We did a special audit where we saw the satisfaction with city services had worsened considerably in East Portland. And what we saw was dissatisfaction with housing conditions, with streets, with the services and the access to services out there. Because when you live out there, you're having to drive more because, you know, public transportation is just farther away because of the layout of the larger blocks. So the city has been working in that area a lot, but ultimately we have a lot more to do because the average income out there is dropping year by year. The density in schools and the concentration of children in the classrooms is growing year by year, and I think it's really going to require a lot of long-term attention by the city in order to address those concerns. This is another one where I'm going to get off my audit a little bit here. This has to do with working with regional partners. And Deb left. And I'm going to talk about Multnomah County in particular. I think we have a great mix of very distinct governments in the Portland area. And what's happened is rather than consolidation, we've specialized. And I think that's actually turned out to be a better service for the public than trying to build one very large bureaucracy that is the be-all, end-all for everybody. But what that means is that coordination and mutual support is also a critical piece of it because the services that one government provides has an impact on the other governments or the lack of services. And that's ultimately what we're seeing with Multnomah County. I've spent half my career in Multnomah County and half of it in the city of Portland. And it's not been just 15 years here and 15 years there. It's been, you know, a year here, 6 years there, 5 years here, 8 years there, and now 10 years back here. So I've seen the initiatives and the consequences of those on both sides over my career. And I need to tell you that Multnomah County is in serious financial trouble. And it's something that it's not their fault. It's really the consequences of decisions that have been made in Salem and to a certain extent in this building. Over the years, I've seen Portland, well, let me start with Salem. What's happened, the county is a arm of the state, and the state basically has delegated more and more responsibilities to the local level without the funds to pay for it. And this is in a time when Measure 5 and other tax limitations have really hamstrung the county's revenues. They depend almost half of their resources are from the state. A third are property taxes, which are limited by Measure 5 to 2 or 3% growth. They have 15% that is affected by inflation, their business income tax. So they really are in what we call a structural deficit. Every year, they're going to have to make cuts because every year their costs are going to grow faster than their revenues. So what you're seeing now is a big cut, but you're going to see another one next year and another one the year after. They can't get out of it with the revenues that they have. I mean, the state legislature would have to restructure all of state financing in order to solve Multnomah County's problem and all the counties of Oregon because they're all in that fix. Mental health got pushed down. Community corrections got pushed down to the local level. Incarceration of felons of less than 1 year got pushed down to the county level. I mean, all sorts of things. The state just said, well, here's a little money, go do it. And the counties have had to try to do it with what they've had or raise local revenues. Let me give you one example of how the city has not contributed very, very kindly to the county situation. Voters approved a levy for Multnomah County to build a jail. But then Portland blocked the county's attempt to put a levy forward to operate that jail. That was in 1999 for the Wapato Jail, and it now stands, and the county has no money to operate it.
Can you elaborate, because I'm not aware
sure.
of what you're describing.
What happened was Bev Stein approached, well, through the budget office, approached the city to say, we're putting together a levy that we would like to make an operating levy to pay for a new jail. Tim Grew wrote a letter back to them saying, well, we agreed in 1990, when Measure 5 passed, that we would respect each other's tax bases. This would violate our agreement from 10 years ago, and we don't think it's a good idea. So then Bev approached City Council and said, you know, I got this memo. Here's our response and explanation for how the world has changed dramatically since Measure 5 passed for Multnomah County, and we'd like to go forward with it. Well, obviously, you know the answer to that. It didn't happen. So
I'm confused about the technical aspect of that. Did the City Council have some legal ability to block them going forward?
There was a joint agreement back that all the governments...
Not legal, it was political agreement.
It was a political agreement.
The county could have gone forward had they chosen to, but just over the objections of the City Council.
Yeah, I think it would have been hard for the county to get the voters to approve something that the City Council thought was a bad idea. I mean, ultimately, I think it was their call, but it going out for a tax increase... that is unpopular with a government that has 85% of the citizens of Multnomah County might be a tough sell. So, I mean, that is one example. I know that they've tried a business income tax increase prior to that to no avail. So
they just cut the business income tax.
I mean,
in the middle of what you're describing, a year ago they passed a cut to the business income tax.
And I think that was the restructuring that the city led the initiative on. And
You thought that was okay, though?
I would not have said that was okay. I mean, I think that they were trying to align the Multnomah County tax with Portland's tax.
But it cost them $800,000 a year.
It did.
Which is exactly the cost of the 12 employees they're laying off July 1st.
Well, they've got over $40 million that they're short. So
I'm talking about the pink slip that the employees got was equated to what they...
That's just a drop in the bucket for what they're facing.
Not for those 12 folks.
We can debate that, but I got to tell you, I've been on both sides of this, and there is a certain amount of...
What?
I'm sorry?
If I recall correctly, they eventually did go forward. I don't remember all the details, but I know over time they have invaded on that agreement on tax basis with the library levies. With the library levies. They did move forward on library levies, and we did move forward on the income tax.
The three-year income tax.
That also benefited them as well.
Well, again, they're in a position.
Correctly, the polling was never great on the Wapato Jail funding piece.
Well, I hate to say it, but the voters had just approved building a jail. So, I mean,
part of the reason I think it wasn't popular is that they weren't under the impression that they would have to pay more to operate it.
Hmm.
So since Measure 5 and 49 and 50, has mm-hmm. there been any attempt by all the jurisdictions that can tax citizens of Portland to get together and make sure that we don't put things on the ballot which are going to cause compression and that we won't get what we are promising yes. to the voters?
There's been extensive... Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been extensive coordination and cooperation over the years.
So what happens now when it, because I appreciate this historical mm-hmm. perspective, what happens now when a jurisdiction wants to put something on the ballot? What's the process for how the leadership gets together and figures out how to cut the pie?
Well, it's been in different election cycles. There's been, my impression has been different degrees of formality and informality. There's a lot of consultation, sort of bilateral consultation. A lot of it has to do with, you know, like anything else, early in a political season, they'll say we're interested in this, then they'll do their polling and figure out what's popular, what's not popular. Those that sort of past a certain sort of threshold go on for more discussion between jurisdictions. In the case of the school levies, surcharges, there was extensive cooperation, so that ended up being a measure that was for schools, some for public safety, but a lot for social service safety net as well. So that's probably the best example of the most robust cooperation between jurisdictions.
Well, and I'm not intending to dwell on the past so much as the future, because ultimately I think something like that is necessary. That, you know, I had hoped that the state would restructure the tax system to help counties. It hasn't happened, and I think what you're going to face with Multnomah County is continuing, you know, dire straits with greater and greater burdens on your emergency medical services, your police services, your housing services, as they start not able to handle the root causes. I've always seen Portland as the thing that moves the problem around, and Multnomah County is the place that has to try and solve it. If it's someone with criminal issues, mental health issues, alcohol and drug issues, health issues, that ultimately Multnomah County is expected to solve them, and Portland moves them, meaning the police will take them to jail or they'll take them to Hooper D-Tax.
Would you agree, though, as well with the observation that isn't in contradiction, but I think stands beside that observation, that Portland and Multnomah County provide a level of social services and enhanced services in a variety of levels that subsidize for the entire region?
I don't know how you would stop that. I mean, I think...
And do you agree that, I mean, we provide more services here through the nonprofits, through the county, through the city. We provide more robust services than most just in the housing arena. I mean, we spend more money, local money, on housing and homeless programs than anybody. I mean, any other government up until recently for a long time.
Well, and I guess what I'm saying is you're going to have to spend more because it's going to get worse. And it's not through, you know, the issue of what the city is failing to do. It's through the issue of what the county can no longer do with its resources.
My point is in what the state fails to recognize, that we are, you know, we are a provider for a big swath of both states. And we don't get, Multnomah County doesn't get any credit for that, nor does the city of Portland.
I agree entirely. So I guess what we would encourage is to think about ways that the city can collaborate more with the county, looking at restructuring local finances, looking at ways that, again, the county is in a tough spot in terms of that 15% of their resource base is the only thing that grows with inflation or can keep up with inflation, and the rest of it is either at the decisions of Salem or Washington, D.C., or, you know, it's just, you know, the 2 or 3% growth in property taxes. There's been some discussion. Commissioner Leonard has been looking at animal control and ways to relieve them of that and actually maybe provide services at a level that city residents want. It's not an area that the county considers a priority, but the city does. And obviously that's one of those issues where, you know, we're in a position where our needs may be more than the county can provide in that area. And, you know, there may be more areas like that.
The, I'll give you one example, Gary. We're waiting for the rulemaking to be finished in Salem on our allocation of the neighborhood stabilization money, which is Congress's approach to the foreclosure mess that's sending money to local jurisdictions to buy distressed properties that are in foreclosure, with the understanding that they'll be retained as part of an affordable housing portfolio. It's a little bit downstream. It's not an upstream solution, but it's at least capitalizing on the availability of less expensive properties, provided you keep them affordable. There's an allocation to the county. There's an allocation to the city. There's an overhead for administration in both. We've suggested to the county, why don't we take all the money and then work with you to figure out how we want to spend it on some joint priorities rather than have two different government bureaucracies, you know, administer. And it's just we really can't afford to duplicate services like that in the future, it seems to me.
I think that's good. I mean, and one of the things, working together, what I think you're going to discover is that I've heard in this government a little bit of I'll call it arrogance. There's a feeling that, you know, our managers are better than their managers. And I've heard that from elected officials also. I've audited in both governments, and I think there are outstanding department heads in Multnomah County, just like there's outstanding department heads in the city of Portland.
I hope you haven't heard that from anybody currently elected.
No. No.
I've never thought that nor heard that.
It's out there. I mean, there's a certain, this place is, I've always described it as the difference between professional basketball and college basketball, that Portland, you know, the city of Portland, start with Multnomah County, it's people who don't have the television time, the attention, the salaries that the people in the big leagues have. And here it's a more physical game. It's more money. It's more television time. So there's a certain amount of that goes on regardless of where you feel they are in terms of the status between Multnomah County and Portland.
I appreciate you saying that because I've lived here all my life and I've been in politics most of my adult life. That is the first time I've ever heard that.
Well, that was my metaphor.
I mean, but, no, my first time I've ever heard that there's a sense from people in the city that people at the county are not as professional. That's the first. Because my own personal experience has been quite the opposite. As you probably know, I reached out and got Jimmy Brown, who had worked for the county his entire career, to lead the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And I suppose I really appreciate this conversation in this context as well, because I guess I've had also a different perception about our collaboration with them, in addition to the animal control stuff that you're alluding to. For 3 years, we rented 57 jail beds a year from the county. Gave them money to operate jail beds that clearly is their responsibility to fund, no questions asked. Spent about $1.3 million a year for treatment services that the county couldn't afford. We continue to provide for people who historically have been treated by the county. So I guess I have a different perception.
But the difference is, why are we having to pay them to do something that really is their responsibility when they don't have enough money to do it in the first place?
Totally. Exactly. And we are because they don't have the money. That's
right.
But to suggest we need to collaborate more because they don't is difficult because I feel like we do.
Well,
in recognition that they don't have enough money.
But if the root cause of the problem is financial for them.
Let's take that a step. I'm glad you raised that. One of my frustrations now in the funding of the Selwood Bridge is that we're getting $35 million from the governor's package for transportation needs. As you've pointed out in your own audits, we have a lot of needs that $35 million won't meet. We are on the precipice of agreeing to give the county $8 million a year as a third of the funding package to build Selwood Bridge, though it's their responsibility. And the frustrating part for me is that the county had put together a thoughtful, balanced funding package for that, and one shopped around to cities. One city, Maywood Park, which I would challenge you to actually call a city.
I've actually been to their city hall.
As have I.
Someone's living room.
Maywood Park objected, so they dropped the plan. And so the alternative is then to ask us for $8 million a year. To me, part of this also has to be just exactly what you're saying, and you said it in your written report, and you haven't discussed it yet, but you said we should talk about a telephone tax, you know, a cell phone tax. I would go a step further and say we should be raising the gas tax in Multnomah County to pay for the bridge. That's the logical way to do it. But one city raised an objection, and we dropped.
Well, that was, just to clarify, in fairness to them, that was the state law. They had to go around and get the approval of selected jurisdictions, and any one of the jurisdictions could veto the vehicle registration fee.
But we could refer to the ballot without approval of those cities a gasoline tax. Mm-hmm. There's a 2 cent a gallon gasoline tax the county levies from years ago currently. We could levy 2 cents or 3 cents or four cents or 5 cents tomorrow if the county had the political will to do it and pay for the bridge. But instead, we're giving $8 million a year that would go to build sidewalks in Lentz or Coley or streets in Lentz or Coley.
Well, as a resident,
I just want to be fair.
Right.
Some of this is about having the the political wherewithal to ask for a tax increase.
Well, and as a Selwood resident, I will say that I think a regional bridge authority is the better answer.
I like that.
But that's not a realistic answer.
Well,
Washington County folks aren't going to sign up to tax themselves to pay for the Selwood Bridge.
But it would be all bridges. It wouldn't be just one bridge.
Yeah, but so far there's been absolutely no interest in that.
Gary, I just want to be cognizant of your time.
Right.
Because I'm hoping that when you wrap up, you can also give us a quick update on the hotly contested race for your successorship.
All right. My successor may be around here somewhere.
And it's a quarter to five.
Right. All right. Let me wrap up. We point out some areas where work has been done and could be done. Let me just talk real briefly. Internal services, we've been monitoring that, and it's a key area because these are the services that help us provide external services to the public, facilities, fleet, telephone, and so forth. So to the degree that, you know, that's an area where I think the city always needs to be cognizant that those cost burdens, the efficiency and timeliness of services can be a hindrance or a help to the services that are provided. And there are, you know, the Office of Management and Finance conducts surveys and identifies areas where work is needed. And we've contacted bureaus of those that had the lowest scores, and we see work happening in there. But it's just a long-term issue that I think council always needs to pay attention to. The demographic, economic, and social changes that are coming are obviously going to be big ones. The aging population, working couples, smaller families, again, the movement of poverty to East Portland, those are all issues that are really going to be a challenge for us to deal with, especially, you know, how it affects our economy and now and in the future. Looking at our transportation system, I mentioned that people living in East Portland don't have as easy access to transit, or there's a lot more walking to get to a bus stop than there is if they're living closer in and the buses are closer together. So those are issues that we always need to be cognizant of, and obviously our education system to meet the next century. We raised in the back of the report a number of audit recommendations that we thought were significant ones in the past that, you know, we just want to bring to council's attention because they're things that are going to continue. And, you know, the police overtime, the number of detectives still remains low. The cost model that is being worked on for transportation, the new pavement management system, looking at the construction contract process throughout the city and how that can be improved, long-term performance measures to assess the homeless plan, parks needing to reinstitute its facility condition index, and then developmental services looking at the organizational changes that are underway to improve coordination and make sure that that happens. So we have references to our past audits in the back of this report, and those are also available online for anyone who wants to read them in more detail. And that's the end of my presentation.
Very, very interesting comments from the council.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gary.
Oh, and you wanted to hear about the...
Did we vote on this?
Would you like to hear from the candidate herself?
Were there any rumors of a vigorous write-in candidate out there? Candidate campaign?
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Thank you. This is truly my first appearance before the City Council.
Wow.
LaVon Griffin Vallade, former county auditor and only candidate for city auditor, and I look forward to joining the ranks of the city and having an opportunity to go through a transition period and learn from my mentor and retiring city auditor Gary Blackmer, and I look forward to working with all of you very much.
What's the date that you would actually take office?
Well, I think I have to wait until the vote is certified, and Andrew has that date sort of tentatively identified as June 17th.
Is there any possible scenario under which you could lose this election, Yvonne?
You know, I suppose there could be a vigorous write-in campaign. That would be interesting. I don't think so. I think I'm it.
By charter, the county, you had to relinquish your old job to run for this. So you're actually technically
unemployed
and a full-time candidate.
Yes.
And you also did not opt for public financing, correct?
That's correct.
Have you set a budget for this campaign?
$300 for the voter's pamphlet and $50 for the filing fee. And
just trying to buy the office.
How does that compare with Gary's first race?
First race for city auditor, I'm not sure.
So who's filed for your seat at the county?
There's only one candidate for the county seat as well, and that's Steve March.
Another old friend from the legislature.
Yeah. Oh, Steve March. He's a CPA.
Yeah.
He's a CIA, Certified Internal Auditor.
And you and Steve were two of the candidates for your previous job, is that correct?
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, we look forward to having you aboard.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
This is a report, and do I hear a motion to accept?
Motion.
Seconded.
Anyone wishes to testify on this matter? Matt, anybody? Catherine, anybody? Carla? All right. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Thank you very much, Matt. Matt's been sitting here the whole afternoon, too, and Catherine, too, and Carla. Thank you all for being here. Thank you. Thank you very much, Gary. It's a very interesting discussion. And, Levon, when you're on board, I hope that these kinds of – I think it's very healthy to have this discussion amongst elected officials, and I appreciate it very much. Aye.
Fish.
Gary, thank you for your service. The state is lucky to have your services going forward. And, Yvonne, we look forward to working with you here. Aye.
Leonard?
I really enjoyed the discussion, too. It's very helpful. I want to do that more. Aye.
Adams?
As always, thank you. Aye. Council is adjourned. We adjourn?
Yes.